Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1356, we feature three stories by new Life Rattle writer Carmen Trapez. Carmen Trapez, a tricultural Afghani Indian Canadian, was born during Virgo season in sunny Doha, Qatar. She immigrated to Canada with her small dysfunctional family, minus her father, when she was 13. Carmen spends most of her time celebrating life with her possessive and superstitious powerhouse of a mother and her two best friends. When she's not out drinking white wine sangrias or getting tattoos of roses, she's at home playing Sudoku in bed or putting together video collages for her blog. Carmen Trapez currently works meticulously on her professional writing career, constantly hunts for beautiful places to photograph, and never stops planning her future on the black sand beaches of Hawaii. Carmen Trapez writes with a distinct voice that brings a fresh perspective to her stories. Her clean prose lets the strength of her character shine. Without sentimentality, she creates finely nuanced portrayals of situations from the darkest to the simply awkward. Tonight's first story takes the viewpoint of a young girl witnessing extreme poverty outside of a hill station in India. Her naive observations of the destitute women, some only girls, selling themselves along the roadside makes everything we see through her eyes that much more poignant. Let's listen now as Carmen Trapez reads her story, The Naked Woman of Panchgani, tonight on Life Rattle.
The Naked Woman of Panchgani by Carmen Trapez. The ride up to Panchgani is long, bumpy, and scary during the monsoon season in India. The headlights flicker on and off as the driver speeds up the curvy roads to the top of the mountain. It feels like the jeep will tumble off the sleet-covered cliffs at any moment. Mama, Sarah, and Ram sleep in the back seat, piled on top of each other. I sit on my grandfather's lap, the front of my body up against the front of his body, facing the rear window, and stare at them from the front seat. They snooze with their feet tucked under their bodies. Mama's green shawl, soft with dark green flowers, wraps around their shoulders and falls across their shivering torsos. I fight fresh tears, sad that I can't sit with them, and force myself not to cry. A buzz bony arms dig into my sides, his skinny knuckles white as they grip my waist, as if he's scared I'll fall out of the truck. The thought scares me too. Abba, can I sit in the back? I pull on my grandfather's gray plaid shirt. There is no room, Beta. His eyes droop shut. Stay here with me. Abba's balding head falls to his shoulder. The thin gray hairs on his scalp dance in the wind. I watch them yo-yo as the jeep barrels up the pebbled roads. The driver turns his head and stares at me. He grins. I can see his smelly black gums and his yellow teeth. Orange hairs grow out of his nose and blend in with his orange mustache. Stubbled skin strains around his mouth when his grin turns into a smile. I don't smile back at him. I want to cry. He turns his head back and looks straight ahead again. I turn and look out the side window. Please, Abba, I can sit on the floor, I mumble into his chest. He snores. I make a sad face and sit down harder on Abba's lap. My legs wrap around his tiny waist. I feel like my yellow, light-up shoes will break him. I crunch my hands into little balls and shove them into Abba's jacket pockets, and then drop my head onto his chest and watch people through the window. Frail Indian women with the skin color of gray elephants walk along the road. They wear colorful dupattas that drag loosely down to their feet. and green, orange, and yellow saris that don't cover all of their bodies. The saris don't have lots of sparkly gems and sequins like Mama's sari. They look like big bed sheets. A lot of the women have mud and dirt on them. Most don't wear shoes. Their feet are ashen and covered in brown goo. Some wear jingly silver balls on red string around their ankles that twinkle as they walk. Big silver circles run through one side of their nose, and black powder covers their eyelids. Red streaks dot their foreheads. Some wear long gold chains and silver bracelets. A few don't wear any jewelry at all. A woman spots our truck and smiles at the driver. She bends over slightly and waves. I can see her boobs. Two more women do the same thing. None of them wear underwear. Little kids run around the road and slap the Jeep as we drive past them. It's like they're playing a game. Most don't wear any clothes. They chase cows on the road. I always see cows on the road in India. I've never seen naked kids on the road before. A few of the kids wear dirty white shirts with no sleeves. Their bellies hang out from underneath. I see a short girl wearing a bright green skirt. She looks as young as me, maybe 11 years old. Black powder circles her eyes and two red spots blotch her cheeks. I wonder why she's allowed to wear makeup. Mama doesn't let me wear makeup. I wonder why she is so tiny. We come to a stop, stuck in traffic. I see a man place 10 rupees in a young, naked woman's hand. I can hear them argue. I don't understand what they're saying. She slaps his face and throws the man's money to the ground. He takes out some coins and throws them at her. I hear other naked women yell. At the young woman, not at the man. The woman bends down and picks up the 10 rupees and the coins. Ow, come, she tells the man. They enter a square shack made of metal and cardboard. The young woman closes the white curtains of a window by the door. The traffic starts to move and we drive again until I don't see the shack anymore. Dirty trees with white and red stripes painted on them, many with lemon and chilies hanging from branches, border the roads. We travel through wet caves bigger than airplanes. I don't see any more women who don't wear underwear. I don't see any more little children who don't wear clothes. At the top of the mountain, I see a sign, Panchgani Hill Station.
That was Carmen Trepez reading her story, The Naked Woman of Panchgani. Tonight's second story feels like a nightmare. When you think things have hit bottom, Trepez rolls out an even more harrowing detail. Children are always vulnerable at the hands of the adults who raise them. When one parent is an abuser, and the other's complicity lies in their abnegation of the grim reality, where can a child turn? Let's listen now as Carmen Trepez reads her story, The Volume of the TV, tonight on Life Rattle.
The Volume of the TV by Carmen Trepez. We hear Dad's footsteps reach his bedroom doorway. Oh shit, Sarah whispers with panic in her voice. He stumbles in and sees Sarah's hand slither away from his laptop as Sarah and I duck under the desk of his study unit. We curl up and brace ourselves. His briefcase hits the floor with a thud. Sarah and I flinch. Our heads hit the metal bars and the wooden top of the desk. Tears form in my eyes. What the fuck is happening here? Dad bellows. Who the fuck is under my desk? Sarah and I make a run for the door. Dad's body guards the entrance. We're small, agile, and quick. Dad is old, angry, and slow. If we can make our way out, he won't be able to grab us in time. Sarah darts through a triangle of space between Dad's legs and flashes to the hallway. I follow behind. My foot tangles in Dad's laptop wires. I can't move. I jerk my legs to try and free myself from the wires. The study unit starts to shake. Stationery cascades down around me. I look up and see Dad's dark, bearded face turn a deep shade of auburn. Heat seems to radiate from his body. I flail at his feet as I try to shake my own feet free. The study unit wobbles. The laptop slides off the desk. Speakers smash against each other. Quiet tears turn into heavy sobs. Sarah calls out for Mom's help. Mom doesn't respond. Dad grabs my leg and yanks it towards him, and the study unit falls apart. He dangles me upside down by an ankle and throws me to the floor outside his room. Sarah wails from the hallway. Mom continues to watch TV downstairs. I drag my body down the hallway, and Sarah and I flee towards the spare bedroom with the door that can't lock. I hear Dad rummage around in his toolbox for something and pick up my pace. "Hurry, Carmen," Sarah yells at me through sobs. "Run, hurry." She holds the bedroom door open, just enough to let me in. Thundering footsteps approach behind us. We slam the door shut and throw our backs against it. Dad bangs at the door with some sort of tool. The door rattles against the frame. We push our heels against the floor to stop our bodies from bouncing away. The door holds shut. Beads of sweat roll down Sarah's face. Dad grunts as he hits the doorknob and knocks it straight off the door. He starts hitting at the hinges and wheezes as he tries to take the door off its frame. Sarah pounds down on the hinges with her hands when Dad pounds the hinges up. "He has the hammer," Sarah yells at me, her eyes wide and face pale. Piled on top of each other on the floor, we sob and heave and hold the door closed with our combined body weight. Dad screams and repeatedly bangs on the same place in the middle of the door. The hammer pierces through the wood and lands between us. Sarah and I scream for help. "Mama," we yell. The volume of the TV increases. "Don't you ever dare even think about touching my stuff ever again," Dad screams each word through the hole in the door. Sarah and I flinch at every syllable. Weak from pushing against the door for so long, our trembling legs shoot straight out from under us. Dad leaves the hallway, but we continue to push with all our might. Dad's bedroom door slams shut. Our bodies jump at the sound. We choke on our sobs and huddle around each other by the door. We wait until Dad starts typing on his laptop, as he does every night after dinner. We wait until the sun sets and the orange light coming in through the window disappears. We wait until Mama comes upstairs and heads to bed without speaking a word to us. We wait until the room fades to pitch black. We wait until we hear the cars on the street grow quiet. We wait until exhaustion takes over us. We fall asleep.
That was Carmen Trepez reading her story, The Volume of the TV. Tonight's final story brings us to a less dire situation. On the brink of graduation from high school, a young woman discovers that the heartbreak she anticipated is not exactly the one she foresaw. Let's listen now as Carmen Trepez reads her story, We Can Do It Your Way.
We Can Do It Your Way by Carmen Trepez. Well, if you can pick up a fork, you can go to York. Tanner slaps his knee at his own joke. Tears of laughter from bloodshot eyes race down my face. We lock arms and make our way to the splash park beside Cawthra Park Secondary School in Mississauga. We pass a joint between us and blaze as much as possible before we sit down to talk about our feelings for each other. Neither of us could do this sober. We barely know each other. Tanner and I met through a friend, Alia, who was looking for people to chip in on renting a limo for the high school prom. I didn't have a date. From what I know, Alia told Tanner to ask me to the prom. He asked. I agreed. Alia is the reason we're in this mess. Another hit? Tanner asks me with a huge grin and cloudy eyes, the smoke from the joint meringuing up to his curls. Even when bloodshot, his eyes have a seductive light to them. I smile back at him and shake my head no. He shrugs and pulls me closer to him. We slow our pace, walking up a hill, and saunter past the multicolored plastic pipes of the splash park. He takes another hit and guides us to the metal benches under the gazebo. I lick my lips. Tanner detaches himself from me and throws his body down on the nearest bench. He takes a final hit and throws the joint in the bushes behind us. I stumble over and sit down next to him. We face each other. Wait, before you say anything, I found this, and it reminded me of you. He digs around in his pockets and fumbles out his lighter, his wallet, and finally the thing he was searching for. It's kinda corny, though. Tanner looks embarrassed. He covers the object with his hands. His eyes glance back and forth from my awaiting face to his hands. I stare at him. He stays silent and motionless. What is it? I finally whisper. His eyes light up as he laughs and shakes his head. Here. He reaches for my trembling right hand, raises it to his lips, and plants a warm, soft kiss on my open palm, and then with his other hand, sets down a small plastic heart. A smile spreads across my face. He closes my fingers over the plastic heart and pushes my hand down to his lap. His hands overlap mine. Carmen, he pulls me to face him. His expression grows serious. I know you don't have the best. He goes silent. I can hear the blood thunder in my ears. His mouth opens and closes a few times, like a fish out of water. The best history with men. That's not exactly news to anyone. I know. Come on, let me finish. Tanner's hands lightly shake mine. He takes a deep breath. His long eyelashes flutter. What I'm trying to say is, I do not want you to feel uncomfortable. I do not want you to do anything you do not want to do. Whatever happens, we can do it your way. We can take it slow. Don't worry about Alia or Jasim or Grayson or anyone. This is between us. We will do it your way, however you want. I feel the heat rush to my cheeks. This seems to feel real for Tanner. I thought it was all a lark, that Alia had set us up as a joke. I look away and pull my hand back to my lap. The plastic heart feels like a red-hot coal. What are you thinking? He asks, his voice sounding uncertain. I had been so afraid that Tanner, one of the most popular boys in school, was going to bail on me and not go to the prom. I thought he was going to break my heart. Instead, I'm going to crush his.
That was Carmen Trepez reading her story, We Can Do It Your Way. This concludes Life Rattle number 1356. My name is Lori Callis. I had the pleasure of recording Carmen reading her stories. Life Rattle was created by Arnie Ackman and Guy Allen. Be sure to tune in next week for more new stories on Life Rattle, your story show.